Morning, Council. Ready to proceed?
Morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Richard D. Liberto, the attorney for the plaintiffs below, appellants Mrs. Susan Shea and her children Christopher and Elizabeth Shea, and the estate of Corporal Christopher Shea, deceased of the Delaware State Police. Your Honors, may I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal time? Your Honor, with me is my associate, Andrew Lundgren.
And let me just take a moment to welcome Mr. Lundgren, my former law clerk. Glad to see you in this capacity, Mr. Lundgren.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I would like to bring to the attention of the Court that Jennifer Kinkus, who also assisted with the briefing, regrets that she cannot be here today. The good news is she gave birth to a baby girl. She regrets that she cannot be in attendance, but she and the baby are doing just fine.
We have that as one of our excuses for not being in attendance.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I would also like to acknowledge the presence of William Kelleher, Esquire, who is on behalf of Amicus Curiae, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the National Organization, and we would like, Mrs. Shea would like to thank him for his participation as amicus, as well as William Earhart, Esquire, and John Spadaro, Esquire, who participated as amicus for the Delaware Trial Lawyers Association.
Welcome, Mr. Kelleher, another of my former law clerks.
Your Honors, the specific issue before the Court is whether the time has come to abrogate common law irresponsible alcohol server absolute immunity in Delaware. Stated another way, should private and commercial alcohol servers have to act reasonably? The first part of my argument will focus on the so-called social host immunity, and the second part on commercial server or tavern immunity. In Diossi versus Moroni in 1988...
I take it, Counsel, that you're going to explain to us right out of the chute why this is an issue for this Court and not for the legislature?
I will, Your Honor. Judge-made immunity should be judge-abrogated. We did it in several situations. This is not something new. In Beatty versus Beatty, when the Court looked at interspousal immunity for negligent acts, the Court held that it is the duty of this Court to review common law rules to ensure that the conditions and policy objectives that justify the rules remain valid. The strength and genius of common law lies in the ability to adapt to the changing needs of society. And the Court said that in Beatty.
Now, one of the questions that we will undoubtedly discuss, so I want to give both sides fair comment on it, will be the fact that this is an issue that has been presented to the legislature, and the legislature has declined to act. Does that give us any particular message?
No, Your Honor, it does not. In fact, the Court can look at this as a concurrent jurisdictional issue, which is absolutely what it was. The Court did the same thing in the Alfrey versus Alfrey case in 1979. And if I may, Your Honor, in Alfrey versus Alfrey, dealing with interspousal immunity, the Court said, like the public policy considerations in the guest statute for automobiles, the problem is more appropriate for legislative action than for judicial determination. The General Assembly has access to relevant information bearing upon these matters, more significant than any afforded to this Court, bound by the limitations of the record of the proceeding. If a change is to be effectuated in the well-settled public policy of this state, such change must be effected by the legislature and not the Court. That's what the Court said in 1979. But when the General Assembly did not change the law. But when Beatty versus Beatty came along in 1993, the Court said the General Assembly has not enacted a statute, and we are now duty-bound to do so. And when the defendants in Beatty said, no, no, you can't, look at Wright, and look at Sampson. It's a highly regulated area. The General Assembly must act. The Court said that those references were, in fact, misplaced. They said that's a misplaced reliance when the Court is removing a judicially created limit on a cause of action, not one that is controlled by a statute. And that is at page 1101 of Beatty versus Beatty. The Court found that husband-wife immunity was a relic from the common law that is no longer viable and no longer meets the needs of modern society. Your Honor, the reason that the General Assembly, I would respectfully submit to the court, has not changed the law is because this is a separation of powers issue. The court has created this immunity. The General Assembly has not. The court created husband-wife immunity. The General Assembly did not. The court created parent-child immunity. The General Assembly did not. The court abrogated parent-child immunity in Williams versus Williams in 1976, where the court said that this is a relic of the common law, similar to what was the husband-wife immunity. And sometimes the answers to these questions are in footnotes. And if we look at footnote 14 of the Beatty decision, I think it speaks volumes more than all the written language and the stare decisis that anybody can point to in determining why the General Assembly has not changed the law in Dramshaw liability. In footnote 14 of the Beatty decision, the court said, we are dealing with a negligent tort by a husband and a wife, and we are going to abrogate husband-wife immunity because it's a relic of old common law. It doesn't benefit modern society anymore. And it's based on a 1924 case called Plotkin versus Plotkin, which was written by Judges Richards and Rodney in the Superior Court of the State of Delaware that quotes Roman law that says once a husband marries a wife, she becomes his property. He can take all she owns. He can take her earnings. She cannot sue him. He can even kill her. That was the language of the court. And she has no cause of action against her. And in 1993, the court said that can't be based on logic. It can't be based on reason anymore. But we have a negligent tort in front of us. And in footnote 14, the court said to the General Assembly, you need to look to intentional torts of husbands and wives, General Assembly, in 1993, and change that to clear up this immunity. And we're in 2006.
Well, isn't one of the policy choices that drinking and driving and the consequences of that are matters of individual responsibility? Is that a permissible policy choice?
Yes, Your Honor, because I think in Wright versus Moffitt, the court based its decision on very bad facts. It was an actor that was complicit in his injury. He was drinking for 5 or 6 hours up at the Fairways Inn on Route 13. He came off the bar stool and tried to cross Route 13 on foot, and he got hit. And the court based this decision, if you look at footnote 3 in Wright versus Moffitt, a lot on assumption of the risk, comparative negligence, and on saying we're basing this on a Maryland decision that says the causative chain is broken when the drinker gets injured. Your Honor, I would respectfully submit.
Well, what I'd like to ask you is, assuming that is, I think you conceded, that is a one policy choice that can be made, how does the General Assembly make that policy choice other than by doing nothing? I mean, would they pass a law that basically codifies the common law?
No. No, I think we look to responsibility. We look to nothing more than everyday tort principles that we use in every other walk of life. The tort law, Your Honor, is by its nature a creature of common law. It has always been. Professor Prosser teaches us that most tort law is created by judges, not by legislatures. And the plaintiff will still have the duty of proving that there was a duty, proving there was a breach of the duty, proving that there was proximate causation, and proving that there were damages. And it's very fact-specific. The trier of fact will determine, was there responsible behavior? Did the alcohol purveyor act as a reasonable person in like or similar circumstances?
I think maybe I'm not stating this clearly. What I'm asking is, if one of the policy choices is the status quo, how does the General Assembly communicate that other than by doing nothing?
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest that that is not the test, and I would again refer to footnote 14 in Beatty, is that we cannot in good faith believe that the General Assembly believes that the status quo in husband-wife immunity is that there should be a complete absolute immunity for a spouse that beats and or kills his wife. If that exists from common law in 2006 Delaware, I think everyone would be surprised. But the General Assembly has not followed the court's recommendation to change that. since 1993. So I think we have two choices. The General Assembly maintains the status of the law by silence, or the General Assembly is sending the court a tacit message that if you create the immunity, Your Honor should abrogate the immunity. If we create a statutory immunity, that is the legislature, we will abrogate a statutory immunity. I don't think there's any other reasonable conclusion to that if we look to what has been done, and that is nothing, since 1993, and knowing that members, some members of the General Assembly are attorneys, read these opinions, they're discussed by legislative counsel, they're discussed in caucus, and nothing has been done on intentional torts of spouses.
All right. Well, with regard to dram shops, a bill was introduced and assigned to committee and never came out of committee and was never voted on. What is the message to be drawn from that?
There's no message, Your Honor. That bill, you're referring to Senate Bill 51 in 2003, was modified by an amendment, Senate Substitute 1 for Senate Bill 51, which created a completely new bill. It limited it to on-premises consumption, it limited it to intentional or reckless acts, and it capped the damages at $250,000. It was changed too late in the session with only three legislative days remaining and no committee days remaining. There wasn't even an opportunity for a committee to hear that. And I would respectfully suggest that if Your Honors know that on June 24th, of 2003, if that bill just gets over to the House of Representatives, and everybody knows how hectic that last week is, there's no way a committee is going to convene and hear such an important piece of legislation and then get a vote on the floor during the last week when they're attempting to pass the budget and the bond bill and the grant and aid package, and they're rushing through things as typical, trying to get done by midnight on June 30th and then go into extraordinary session on July 1st. So I would suggest, Your Honor, that that is not dispositive, that the Ontiveros Court in Arizona, which I've cited in my brief, saw the same situation where two bills were introduced in Arizona, did not get released from committee, and they rejected the same inference, saying the court cannot psychoanalyze the legislature and say, because they did not pass this bill, they were not in favor of this, and they're sending us a message that we cannot abrogate our own court-created common law immunities. In fact, in Brigance, the Oklahoma Supreme Court, which I also cite in my brief, was facing a situation where the legislature actually repealed dram shop laws in 1959, and the court allowed dram shop cases in 1986, saying there are many reasons that the legislature changes law that isn't necessarily related to the specific issue before us. There may not have been enough advocacy for the law from special interest groups, or it could have been advocated against by powerful lobbying and powerful special interest groups. And the court saw it as its responsibility, as an institution of one of the three great, powerful, co-equal branches of government, to do its duty and to change this situation, as 41 other states have done, Your Honor, and the District of Columbia, and California, and Louisiana have done in respect to minors. There is a national trend which has evolved since this court decided Wright versus Moffitt in 1981. That national trend has come across this nation like a tidal wave, and Delaware is left with only six other states, as Justice Moore said in a workers' comp situation in the Mr. Pizza case, in the backwaters of jurisprudence in this area of law.
Now, of the 41 states, how many of those are by legislation as opposed to a court abrogating the common law?
Your Honor, I'm going to attempt to answer it directly in it, but I'd like to preface it with this in candor. It's a bit of a moving target because sometimes the court does it and then the legislature tweaks it and modifies it. Sometimes the legislature does it and then the court tweaks it and modifies it. But at last count, the number is nine by common law. And the states that have done it by common law, if Your Honor would like me to enumerate those, I certainly can do. Arkansas, Hawaii, Massachusetts, Mississippi, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Washington State, and the District of Columbia. Your Honors.
So on the other side of that, direct parallel to that would be how many states you say that still have the common law rule by court decision? Six?
There are seven total, Your Honor, and they are Delaware, Kansas, Maryland, Nebraska, Nevada, South Dakota, and Virginia. And these are all enumerated as well in the amicus curiae brief of MAD, and we refer to it in our brief. Your Honor, one of the real problems that the court saw in doing this in 1981 when they decided the Wright versus Moffitt case, and later on with Arnold Sampson's case, and later on after that when they decided Michael Akers' case, who was killed after a minor got drunk at the Columbus Inn, and after deciding Calvin Oaks' case, that there was empirical data that the court needed, and the General Assembly was better able to determine this empirical data. And additionally, there was fact-finding necessary that the General Assembly was better able to do. I would suggest that in 1981 that may have been fair and accurate, and the court has been looking for that information. We have provided that information, Your Honor. Everybody else that has come down here over the past 25 years says, let's change this only applicable to minors. Let's change this only as to a bouncer that doesn't take control of a drunken driver and keeps him in the bar. Let's change this when it's served off premises on a bus going up to the Phillies game and somebody gets drunk. We are directing this head on, Your Honor. We have provided the courts with the empirical evidence through the national organization MAD. Delaware is one of the deadliest states in the nation in terms of drunk driving deaths. There's about 60 people a year killed in Delaware, and it's consistent. 59, 62, it's consistent right along the line. The professors who've written on this have provided the empirical evidence. Professor Sloan at Duke, and his study was published in 2000, and it's in our papers. Professor Eisenberg at Stanford, and his studies are in our papers. This will reduce drunken driving deaths by 3 to 5.8% on the dram shop. And if the social host becomes law as well, it will probably double. So we're talking about up to 12% reduction in deaths on Delaware highways if we enact this law.
What we're really talking about is, of the three separate and allegedly co-equal branches of government, which is the best to analyze these facts, to hold a debate over the inferences to be drawn from those facts, and indeed to determine which of those facts are true and which are not, and then determine what the policy of the state should be. And the ultimate issue is, should that be a forum of introduction of a bill in the legislature, committee review of the bill, or reporting out of the bill and debate on the two floors of the respective houses of the legislature, or should it be done by a three-judge panel of the Delaware Supreme Court?
Your Honor, I think it should be done by this court at this time, because the court has given the General Assembly 25 years to do it, and they have not. And I would suggest that because this court has created the immunity, the responsibility falls back on this court to abrogate the immunity. That being said, the General Assembly has done significant fact-finding on this, and I've directed the court to the references in my papers. The Joint Sunset Committee met and had all these hearings and had all these this evidence, and they determined in their report that irresponsible over-service of alcohol is one of the major problems of drunk driving deaths in Delaware. And I've directed the court to their report in the year 2000 to the governor and the members of the General Assembly. They abolished the Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission. They said it was the most significant thing they've ever done in 20 years of the Joint Sunset Committee, one of only three committees that has members from the House and the Senate sit together. The other is the Joint Finance and the Bond Bill Committee. This was a big deal for them to do that. They also found that they had to establish an Alcoholic Beverage Server Responsibility Trainer Act, and they did that in 1991 based upon
how many full sessions of the General Assembly have there been since they issued that report?
Since they issued the report in 2000? Well, it's approximately three, because of 2016.
And still no action,
Your Honor. And still no action.
Do you want to save your last minute for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, Justice Ridgely. Your former clerks are smart enough not to work with me, so I have none of them to introduce, but I do have a one-month-old at home, if that makes any difference.
And I did perform your wedding ceremony.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it's a level playing field for that.
I am not so presumptuous, as to believe that I can articulate to this court the reasons for affirming the Superior Court decision as well as, or certainly any better than Justice Duffy, Justice Walsh, or Justice Holland, pardon me, those three authors of the six Supreme Court decisions over the past 25 years, each of which has left the creation of a Dram Shop Act to the General Assembly, have again and again set forth the rationale for that policy. I do not pretend to offer any better bases or more valid reasons than those justices have done. This Court has repeatedly held that the General Assembly is the only power, is the only body that has the power and responsibility to license and regulate the use and sale of alcoholic beverages for the benefit of the public. This Court has repeatedly held that the public policy considerations and scope of any Dram Shop Act must be left to the legislators. And most saliently, the policy question regarding the propriety of judicial creation of a cause of action in an area subject to specific statutory regulation is the same today as it was when Wright v. Moffitt was decided. Those words are, again, from Justice Walsh in Sampson, Justice Holland in Oaks, and again, Justice Holland in Acker. They are the same today, October 25th, 2006, as they have been over the past 25 years. New surveys, new statistics, modern trends do not change the jurisprudence of the last 25 years. This case is not distinguishable in any way from the precedent of the last 2.5 decades. The facts are not unique. The same arguments by the plaintiffs are being proffered here as they have been for 25 years. Indeed, most of the case law cited by the appellants is older than the most recent Supreme Court decisions on the matter. To argue that this Court simply needed some new data or new information misses the point entirely. For the Delaware trial lawyer's amicus brief to argue that a judicial enactment of a Dram Shop Act would necessarily result in a reduction of lawsuits is amusingly disingenuous. The cases directly on point that this Court has recognized from other jurisdictions, the Court has recognized that other jurisdictions have changed common law, that there have been modern trends potentially contrary to these holdings. But never has this Court wavered in its deference to our General Assembly. Never has this Court wavered in the decision that Dram Shop Act is for the legislature to consider and enact if appropriate. And Justice Ridgely, as you have pointed out, the lack of action speaks volumes in this case. This is not the first, the 2003 bill was not the first bill, the first time that this type of statute was proposed. It does not pass judicial or legislative scrutiny.
Does the lack of action signal awaiting this Court to act in any way?
No, Your Honor, and I don't think it makes any sense to say that the legislators are sitting there twiddling their thumbs saying, boy, I wish that Supreme Court would enact a Dram Shop law. There is absolutely no reason why they would believe that they don't have the complete authority to weigh the issues, to look at the statistics and the data, and to come to the conclusion that's necessary. The conclusion has clearly been this is not the time, place to enact this kind of law. For whatever policy considerations there are, we are not going to enact this law. I cannot imagine a legislator saying we're going to leave this to the Supreme Court. The Court has other functions and other responsibilities.
Mr. DiLiberto suggests that there is a reason, and that is because this was a judicially created common law immunity, and that the legislature, in light of the fact that we are at least in the seventh grade civic books, separate co-equal branch of government, they're deferring to us to act on what we initiated in the first place.
But they're not deferring, Your Honor. In fact, the synopsis of the most recent legislation specifically states that Delaware courts have consistently recognized that a bar owner could not be found liable absent a statutory cause of action. So the legislature knows where the court stands. The legislature then weighs legislation that's proposed and has decided not to act. Again, that inaction is an affirmative indication of where they stand on this issue. And that is that we have the authority to do something here that the courts have refused to do. We're not going to do it. That says something.
Evidence of an intent that the status quo remain would be for the bill to be introduced, debated, and defeated.
I guess we can debate legislative policy, Your Honor. I think going to committee and not surfacing from committee is a pretty good indication of that.
Well, only the chairman can prevent it from coming out of committee, so one legislator. that could be only just one legislator speaking.
That's correct, Your Honor, and there's no way to know why things are going on as they're going on in the legislature. But I think if the body of the legislature wished to enact this bill, the chairman would, or chairwoman would debate it, would send it to the floor. It simply doesn't have the support of the legislature. I think it's the only conclusion that can be drawn, given the absence of enactment of the most recent bill and 25 years of the lack of enactment of any bills along this line. This court said, we encourage the legislature to take this up, has said that for 25 years. The legislature has not done so.
You mentioned the enactment of the recent bill?
I'm sorry if I misspoke. There's been no enactment of any bill, Your Honor. There was the discussion of the recently proposed Senate and House bill. I'm sorry. So, again, this court has not wavered for 25 years under many different circumstances and openings and arguments from people who have been tragically injured and killed by drunk drivers. The time is not now to start wavering under solid jurisprudence for 25 years.
Well, how do you distinguish Deedy? Isn't that a sort of the parallel thing where the court initially says this is for the legislature to take up, and then the court ultimately says the legislature hasn't, and so we will because it's not supported in modern times?
I think I'm sorry, Your Honor. Deedy can be distinguished under the facts. Again, Beattie is a 1993 case. Moss Rehab is a 1997 case where this court, through an educational malpractice case, cited analogously the support for Wright, Sampson, Oaks, et cetera. So, again, I think this court has shown support even after Beattie for the fact that the legislature has its own role in the balance of powers. But on its facts, as Justice Ridley, Your Honor, mentioned earlier, it's a personal responsibility issue. In Beattie, you have the horrific incident of a man beating a woman, his wife, and the court saying, we're not going to tolerate that. You're taking responsibility for your action, Mr. Wife Beater. This is a case of, again, someone at a bar consuming alcohol voluntarily. No one's forcing any alcohol down his throat. Leaving the bar under his own power voluntarily getting into a car and causing harm to another person. The responsibility for that act is the drunk, as it should be, as it has been in this case and will be forever.
Is there a serious issue over if, in fact, liability would attach to the provider of the alcohol for giving an individual more alcohol than it would have been reasonable to do under the circumstances and the facts established that that scenario actually existed? Isn't it sort of indisputable that that would have a chilling effect on the number of drunk drivers on the roadway?
Your Honor, I don't know if it would. I wouldn't consider that.
The reason I ask you that question, what has troubled me is the extent to which we make what the United States Supreme Court calls, and frankly does all the time, legislative fact-finding from the bench. That's the troublesome issue for me. But isn't there at least one arena in which common sense demands only one result? And that is, it could have nothing but a dampening effect if we shifted accountability to the providers of alcohol, at least on a shared basis with the consumer of alcohol, when there's a tragic incident on the roadway.
The trouble is, Your Honor, that these statistics don't necessarily take into consideration the rigorous regulation which applies to bar owners. Delaware is one of only 15 states where there is a certification procedure. So these bar owners and bartenders and barmaids and everyone else understand that if they're serving a drunk, they may lose not only their job, but the owners can lose a liquor's license and be out of business forever. So I think that there is exceedingly strenuous scrutiny in this state over the serving of alcohol to people. And I don't think you can necessarily draw the conclusion that shifting wealth from bar owners to injured people after the act of an independent person would make any difference.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Reese.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Scott Reese on behalf of Catherine Matassa. The question here is whether there should be social host liability in the state of Delaware. And I think that analysis has to start with the 1988 decision in Diassi versus Maroney. In that case, there was a parking attendant who was working at a at a party, and he was injured by a guest who was overserved, a minor guest. The lower court dismissed the case on social host liability, and when it came to the Supreme Court, the argument was made, and it may have been made below, but the argument was made that it really the analysis shouldn't be on social host liability. The analysis should be whether there is, in fact, a premises responsibility on the part of someone who owns a piece of property to provide someone working there a safe place to work. And on that limited exception, this court said, we are going to allow the plaintiff, the injured parking attendant, to sue the landowner because they failed to provide a safe place to work. But on a number of places in the decision by Judge Justice Walsh, he stated that social host liability is not the law of the state of Delaware, and nothing in this opinion should be read to extend social host liability or to create it. In fact, he stated, because our holding sustaining a claim against a social host is a novel one, we deem it important to emphasize what we do not decide. Our holding may not be read to extend the liability of social hosts for the injuries of other guests, which are caused by the tortious conduct attributable to the social host dispensing of alcoholic beverages. So that in 1988, this court was pretty clear. We do not have social host liability. There is an exception for premises liability, and the court recognized that exception. Now, Mr. DiLiberto articulated this morning that perhaps where we are is determining whether social host liability, whether the liability of someone serving alcoholic beverages at a party to a family member, to a minor, to another guest, and therefore creating some vicarious liability when that person injures the third party, whether that is, I think I quote him fairly, a relic. And we talked about Beatty this morning, and Beatty, of course, is the case abrogating interspousal immunity. And that case set forth, I think, a standard. It said, therefore, it is within the authority of this court to abrogate the common law doctrine if it no longer merits recognition. And in that case, they, of course, got rid of interspousal immunity, saying it no longer merited judicial recognition. And similarly, the court in Moss Rehab, although perhaps stating it a little bit more strongly the other way, when it said we don't have educational malpractice, we are not going to create a tort of educational malpractice, said, this court has been vigilant in discharging its responsibility to preserve and advance Delaware's common law heritage, quoting then Beatty. So that Moss having been decided in 1997, some years after Beatty. So the question then is, to some degree, what is the standard that this court looks to? Is it a relic? Is it the question of we just get rid of things when they no longer make common sense? What is there a certain presumption that will preserve the common law in the absence of a fairly strong reason to change it? I think Mr. DiLiberto's argument is a good one. I like it. Is it a relic? And in Beatty, it was a relic. And in Moss Rehab, it wasn't a relic. And the question then before this court is social host liability, is the liability of someone for serving alcoholic beverages to someone who then leaves that party, not someone who was on the premises, but someone who leaves that party and then injures someone hours later, 5 minutes later, is there that vicarious liability under those circumstances? I think the answer is no. And many of the courts that have looked at this over the last 10 years or 20 years or perhaps even longer use as their rationale as to why we don't apply that kind of liability to a social host is because of the individual's responsibilities for consuming alcohol. That is, it is a personal decision to consume alcohol, and it is something that once a person leaves the premises, that the social host, who may have served that alcoholic beverage, that he is no longer able to control the actions of the person leaving. So you have, on the one hand, it's the individual's decision to drink, and you have, secondly, the social host no longer has the ability to control the actions of that third person or of that guest once he leaves and injures a third party. So that was the stated reason why social host liability has withstood perhaps the test of time. But the question then still comes to, is it a relic? And I guess whether this body or whether the legislature is the better body to deal with the various public policy issues that are inherent in opening up this door to say that this relic should change. I suggest that the first answer is clearly Beatty was a situation where we had a relic. Clearly Moss Rehab was a situation, educational malpractice, we didn't have a relic. This court should preserve the common law unless there's a pretty clear reason to change it.
Well, aren't we in a time of societal change, at least to this respect? Friends don't let friends drive drunk. The designated driver program, all of these are suggesting that the rules of conduct should be different today.
I don't suggest that there's a different standard with respect to drinking and driving today than there was 20 years ago. Many things have happened in the last 20 years to change those rules and regulations, changing the blood alcohol limit, as you said, designated drivers, which is, of course, is not the law, but it is a societal acceptance. But this body is simply not the place where it is best to resolve the various public policy issues that are inherent in simply saying we are going to open up the door for allowing lawsuits against social hosts. Now, and I will say this, and I think implicit in your question is somehow that there's a trend. And even in Diassi, Justice Walsh said that at that point there was no trend. He didn't see a trend. All he saw was two states. He stated, I believe it, at page 6, social host liability based on common law tort principles has received recognition in only a few jurisdictions, one of those being New Jersey, with the Kelly case, which is then cited. And since that time, it's not as if there's been a huge groundswell, a trend. I think Mr. DiLiberto used a term of a tidal wave with respect to the dram shop changes. There certainly, in reviewing the case law, there has not been some recognition that there is this tidal wave. To the contrary, the states that have looked at changing social host liability, many have declined to do so, using traditional principles of deferring to the legislature because of the public policy issues that are inherent in making that change. Others have said simply it's the legislature's job to do it, and others more articulately have said it's not for the judiciary, which decides cases on a one-off basis on the facts that are before it, it's not for a judiciary to make decisions that have many implications of who would be the proper plaintiff and who would be a proper defendant. So under those circumstances, that trend has not emerged since first recognized that there might be one in Diassi. So for all those reasons, I don't believe that social host liability exists in the state of Delaware now, and there's simply no reason to recognize it as being a relic that requires change. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Reese.
Beatty didn't say there was no social host liability. Beatty said we leave that for another day, and I respectfully suggest that's today. 32 states now recognize social host liability, and that's in our brief, and Matt has provided the court with the website.
Now that, again, broken down by statute and...
I do. 13 by common law and 19 by statute. And that's on the website that's provided by Matt, Your Honor. And that's just social host. It doesn't need to be a relic. if that's the term we have to quibble over. The court said in Williams versus Williams, where the rule is court made, it can be court modified if reason and a right sense of justice recommend it. Does reason and a right sense of justice recommend it in this situation? And the defense seems to say, well, what if it's only 5 minutes? What if it's 10 minutes? What if it's an hour? What if it was her brother? What if it was her sister? What if he only had 7 wines? What if he had 10 wines? Those are all factual issues. Those are all proximate causes issues that a trier of fact can deal with, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, counsel, for a very interesting argument. We'll recess and take the case under advisement.